This is a test. 1, 2, 3.
The Employee Benefits Programs Committee to order, and I want to thank all of you for getting up early today. And sure, I want to thank everyone for getting up so early today. Vice Chair Dever and our council and I'm throwing you under the bus too, just so you know. Okay. Had a meeting. We thought that it would be appropriate for us to discuss a few of these bills that are going through the chamber to make sure that PERS has the ability to order reports to comply with the different bills out there right now. And I thought, you know, it would be important to have this discussion because, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so if we do this and have this conversation and they're able to move forward, I think that's the whole intent. Obviously, we're not here to debate or talk policy. We're here to determine if we take jurisdiction.
We already took jurisdiction.
Oh, we did. Okay.
You and Senator Dever did.
What's that?
You and Senator
Oh, that's Dever right.
Did.
Okay. So, all right. So, Scott, if you could get up.
Do you want to start off taking roll?
Roll, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Representatives LaFour.
Here.
Doctor.
Here.
Kreit.
Here.
Lanning.
Here.
Mitskog.
Here.
Owens.
Here.
Ruby. Senators Dever.
Here.
Beckedahl.
Here.
Krebsba. Larson. Lee.
Aye.
Mather.
Aye.
We do have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Well, Scott, I guess I'd ask you to start up with the bills in the order that we have on the agenda and start with House Bill 1374 and the proposed amendment and how that might affect you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Scott Miller. I'm the Executive Director of the North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. I've been having a lot of fun this first legislative session back in North Dakota. These last few days have been interesting, although we'll say that. House Bill 1374 started off as an attempt to get the Medicaid expansion within the purview of the Department of Human Services, DHS. For their, they have a very unique pharmacy benefit manager structure they use for Medicaid. It expanded to kind of take over North Dakota PERS as far as our pharmacy benefit manager services. We had been added into that same requirement that we use the Department of Human Services pharmacy benefit manager. That taking on 60,000 people like that wasn't something that DHS was really comfortable with, and so it got amended and we were taken out. At the last minute, we were added back in with these amendments. And the amendments to 1374 require as they apply to PERS. And so as far as you're interested for this committee related to PERS, it states that the amendments state that the board may not execute or renew a contract for prescription drug coverage unless the contract allows the board to perform a biannual performance audit. The contract must allow the board full access to all financial data related to the contract, and there's a list of that type of data that's provided within there. The amendment also says the board must use an independent auditor for these audits, and it goes on to say that if the board chooses to bundle health and pharmacy coverage, the health plan carrier cannot enter into a contract with a pharmacy benefits manager, or PBM, unless the board sees and approves the contract. So administratively, these have a number of effects. What it essentially does is it prohibits us from bundling because we'll never be able to see that contract between the primary carrier and the PBM. And so we'll have to carve out our pharmacy benefit manager. Right now, it's fully bundled. We offer both the health plan and the pharmacy benefit. We contract for that all in one kind of fell swoop. We've had that arrangement since, I think, forever. Certainly with Sanford Health Plan and then the Blues before that. So that will require us to unbundle because, again, we won't be able to see that contract. It will also require us to hire a transparent pharmacy benefit manager most likely on a self-insured basis, because the requirements that are in this section or in this amendment open up so much of their records that really only a transparent PBM is going to be able to comply with that, or is going to be willing to comply with that. Transparency isn't a bad thing. A lot of people, I'm certainly in favor of it. I was in the Attorney General's office for a long time and certainly understand the reason for the open records laws and the transparency that benefits from those open records laws. The only issue is that when you go out to bid, the information that I have is the transparent PBMs are not able to guarantee as much as far as rebates, as far as other guarantees. They're not willing to commit to as high of guarantees as a what's called a spread PBM. So there are two types of pharmacy benefit managers. The transparent is one where we just hire them, we pay them, say, $2 a prescription to administer this. All the money that we pay goes straight to those drugs, and everything that we get back is all the rebates, or most of the rebates anyway. A spread PBM doesn't have as much of that opaqueness. I mean, it's much more, or transparency, it's much more opaque. We can track, like right now with OptumRx through Sanford, we don't know how much they're paying the pharmacists. Of course, we don't know how much the pharmacists are paying for their drugs. And so there's a lot of, they're kind of two black boxes on either side of this equation, which we can't really penetrate. So transparency isn't a bad thing, but again, those transparent PBMs are not generally willing, or the information I have, are not willing to provide as much in the way of guarantees going forward. And what that does is when you get the initial bids from a spread PBM versus a transparent PBM, the transparent PBM tends to look a little more expensive because they can't guarantee as much in rebates. The spread PBM can do that because they know that there is an underlying stream of revenue that they can take from if they're, say they guarantee $10 million, whatever it is, and they only come up with $9 million in rebates. Well, that other $1 million they can make up through some other streams of income. Transparent PBMs don't have those kind of hidden streams of income, and so they're not as willing to guarantee or provide as many guarantees going forward. What that can do is I can add between 0.5% and 1% to our premium cost. And so just to make sure that you understand that going to transparency, again, isn't a bad thing, but it may cost more. That's what we wanted to bring up to your attention. It also requires or allows us to do independent audits. Right now, we have conducted an audit before. The depth of that audit has been criticized. I don't know whether fairly or not. I wasn't here. Nonetheless, we have the ability to audit them right now. Sanford has the contractual right to audit and has audited their previous PBM twice, and they've just made the business decision to audit the last 2 years of that relationship. They use an independent third-party auditor, exactly what this requires, and they pay for it, which is even more important because these are $50,000 to $100,000 audits, and since we don't have an appropriation in here for us to be able to pay for those audits, we would need some sort of appropriation here. We're also very concerned that these provisions apply to our Medicare Part D.
Excuse me. Who has a question? Representative Crite.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now that and once the Department of Human Services bill passes, from Sanford, the pharmacy will be coming into the department. Is that going to have any effect on any of this, or because Sanford will not be involved anymore?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crite, the way that the bill reads now, North Dakota PERS would not go into the Department of Human Services for PBM services.
Okay,
so Medicaid expansion would. That has nothing to do with us.
Okay.
But our PBM would still be through Sanford and their current PBM for the current for the upcoming biennium. I think you all know this is the last year of our renewal with Sanford, and we're going to be going out to bid next year.
Representative Doctor, or do you have further questions?
No, that's good.
Representative Doctor.
Thank you, Chairman LaFleur. Question, so Sanford, they have their own PBM though, don't they? Optium?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doctor, they don't have their own, they contract with a PBM, and that's what they have to do under our contract. Is there, since it's a bundled product, we just go to one carrier, which is Sanford, and they provide us both the health and the pharmacy benefits. They farm that out to Optum. When we were with the Blues, they had their own PBM called Prime.
Continue.
So does Sanford get some of the rebates?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doctor, under our contractual arrangement with Sanford, we get 100% of the rebates.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair Dever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott, do you happen to know the current status of 1374 and Conference Committee? I understand that they agreed to these amendments.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dever, that is correct. In the Conference Committee, there was a motion that was passed that the Senate accede from, I'm going to gap the technicalities, but that the Senate recede from their amendments to the bill and accept the amendments that we're talking about today.
So have they resolved the Conference Committee?
The Conference Committee met yesterday again to make a small tweak to the study that I failed to mention. I'll try to remember to mention, but they made a small tweak to the wording of the study that would be required, and then did the same thing. There was another motion to that the Senate accede from its previous amendments and accept these amendments.
Okay. Anything further on this one?
I would point out it also requires a study that the last section requires several things. It requires us to go out to bid, which we had to do under statute anyway. Requires us to consider self-insurance bids for health and pharmacy benefits, which we do anyway. It also goes forward and says that I'm probably going to gap on it. The request. No, this isn't it. It goes on to say that the study should also examine whether I'm gapping on it. Whether it would be prudent to go out to self-insured, which we do anyway. And basically, this amendment is going to require us to have a carved-out pharmacy benefit manager with a transparent PBM on a self-insured basis. And so, really, the study isn't going to do anything. The statute already requires us to do what the study directs legislative management to consider studying. Frankly,
Senator Mather.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and sir, I'm wondering if we were to defeat Section 2 of this bill, would you still want the study or not?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, the study wasn't my idea. If you were to defeat Section 2, which has all the language that, again, will require us to go out to self-insure with a transparent PBM, the study may still be, in that regard, may still be valid. That way we could study what the effects are. Although, again, when we go out to bid, like we did 4 years ago when we hired Sanford, we explicitly asked for self-insured bids as well. And the board was prepared to carve out self-insurance with a transparent PBM 4 years ago, but there was a provision within statute that required us to get stop-loss insurance for self-insured pharmacy, which isn't available on the market. And so we weren't able to do that and had to switch back over to just hiring Sanford. Now that's changed. Senate Bill 2045, our technical amendments bill, we took that provision out, or had you take that out, and so we no longer have to get that stop-loss insurance for that carved-out self-insured pharmacy benefit manager. So we kind of already do it anyway. This would provide maybe some assurance to the Legislative Assembly that we are doing that. That's completely up to the Legislative Assembly.
If you'll recall earlier, the committee authorized the chair and vice chair to take jurisdiction, and we did take jurisdiction of these three bills. So our job today is to give a favorable, unfavorable, or no recommendation, even though, I mean, that's our statutory job here. And even though it might have little or no effect, that's what we're required to do. So in the interest of time, unless anybody has any questions, I'd like to move through the agenda
Mr. Chairman?
Scott.
I'm sorry. The point that I was trying to get to also is it would also affect our Medicare Part D. And so we would have to do the same thing with Medicare Part D. We would have to do that much quicker because this will go into effect, I assume, on August 1st of this year. We would not be able to renew with our current Part D pharmacy carrier until later this fall because it's dependent on some things that the federal government has to do. And so we would have to go out to bid for our Medicare Part D program. Again, these requirements would require us to hire a transparent PBM on a self-insured basis, which may, again, increase that cost. At least it looks like it at the beginning of that. And so that cost, since it's paid 100% by our retirees, will affect the 9,000 or so retirees that we have on the plan. And more than likely, we'd need to move away from our current PBM, which is, again, going to cause some disruption. So just wanted to make sure that you had that information.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Is there a motion? Favorable, unfavorable, no recommendation.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Dillard.
I'm the last person on this committee that should make a motion on this bill. But I'd like to point out that Section 1 involves moving Medicaid expansion, the pharmacy, in-house. That's been done in the human services budget. In my conversation in a meeting a week or so ago with both Senate and House leadership, I suggested that it would be better that be left in the human service budget so there's flexibility in the next session if we decide that we need to adjust that rather than having it in the Century Code. The study in this bill doesn't really apply to anything that we can't already do. So I think the issue is on the PBM performance audits, and if you like that, move it forward. If you don't, unfavorable. But I'm not going to make a motion.
Senator Mather.
Mr. Chairman, are you open to splitting this into different sections, or do you want to go just the bill totally as it is?
Mr. Chairman, the bill is in conference committee. That's an up or down vote as it comes out of conference committee.
I'm asking.
I would defer to Jennifer. My understanding is we have to make a recommendation on the whole bill.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I think one way you could look at this is you've got the amendment in front of you. And I'm going to link to that.
While she's just looking at that, Mr. Chairman, what I was thinking was Division A would be Section 1 and Section 5, and Division B would be the other sections.
Mr. Chairman, my read on this is it does at least three things. It's got the Medicaid component, it's got a study component, and it's got the pharmacy, the drug component for PERS. What we have before us is the amendment. The amendment has the study and the pharmacy component in it. So I think if you looked at the amendment in and of itself, that would be, do you approve the amendment or not?
I would move a do not pass. Or unfavorable recommendation.
There's a motion by Senator Mather to make an unfavorable recommendation. Is there a second? Second by Senator Krebsbaugh. Discussion. Representative Laney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm a little denser than the fog outside right now, but it would seem to me that the study portion of it would be somewhat value, even though there may not be a lot to gain on it. Those of us that aren't all that comfortable with it may like to see whether or not it succeeded as well as we hope it will, but aside from that, I guess I don't really care, but I think the study would help some of us anyway to decide whether it was a good decision or a bad decision.
You know, I would concur with that, and to Senator Mather's earlier point, there's definitely provisions in here that are positive and some that are not.
So another possibility is we could have is no recommendation because there are good components in here. But okay, any further discussion? Representative Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Transparency is wonderful. We should have it in as much as we can. But in this case, I'm going to support the do not recommend for the simple fact that I think there's still some things missing here. The transparency costs too much, not only for us, but for our state employees possibly and our retirees. And I just, at this point with the information I have, it costs too much for me.
Okay. Any further? Okay. If Jennifer, I'll have you call the roll.
Thank you. Representatives, Doctor?
Yes.
Great?
Yes.
Lanning?
No.
Mitzkog?
Yes.
Owens?
Yes.
Ruby?
No.
Senator Stever?
Yes.
Beckedahl?
Aye.
Krebsbach?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Lee?
Aye.
Mather?
Aye.
And LaFleur?
Yes.
Motion carries on favorable recommendation.
Okay, and we'll go down to Senate Bill 2010, and that's, I think we actually passed it out of our chamber.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the committee, again, Scott Miller, Executive Director of the North Dakota Public Employer Retirement System. Senate Bill 2010 is the Insurance Department appropriation, much as I'd like to play with my friend Jeff Rubin. The only part of this that really considers us is Section 14, which added in a provision that would prohibit an accident or health insurance policy issued under North Dakota Century Code Chapter 26.1-36 from taking into account any pre-existing condition or waiting periods, refusal of coverage, or rate setting. 26.1-36-01 is the applicability statute for that chapter, and it specifically states that that chapter does not apply to, quote, any blanket or group insurance policy, unquote, unless the provision specifically says that it does. And so facially, it looks like it doesn't apply to us. In talking with one of the sponsors of the amendment, he believed that it would apply to us, and I've gotten conflicting information from a couple other sources as well. My understanding is that they are going to be bringing another amendment back to the conference committee that would change this. It unfortunately may be premature for you to take a look at this because of the fact that it's not done yet. It's not fully baked. I'm not sure what it's going to look like. As it sits, given the notwithstanding any other provision of law to the contrary language, I mean, that's something that lawyers like to try to do to shortcut any other law and make sure that this applies to everyone. So it's a little unclear whether it would apply to us. If it did, well, I guess with that said, if it did, our consultant took a look at this, and basically, since we're a very large group insurance program, it's really not going to affect us anyway. Another source that I talked to had said that it may affect us, but our consultant said that it wouldn't. So perhaps just taking no position would be best on this at this point.
I would then we are required to make a recommendation on each one, are we not?
If we just take jurisdiction over them, unless you reconsider the action by which you took jurisdiction.
Oh, I see. Well, the chair would entertain a motion for a no recommendation.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Senator Beckedahl.
Second.
Second by Representative Lanning. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll ask the clerk to take the roll, please.
Thank you. Representatives LaFleur?
Yes.
Doctor?
Yes.
Crate?
Yes.
Lanning?
Yes.
Mitzkog? Owens?
Yes.
Ruby?
No.
Senator Stever?
Yes.
Beckedahl?
Aye.
Krebsbaum?
Aye.
Larson?
Yes.
Lee?
Aye.
And Mather?
No.
And that motion of no recommendation carries as well.
Thank you. Okay, let's go right into 2023 then. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, Scott Miller, Executive Director of the North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. Senate Bill 2023 is our appropriation bill. When it went over to the House made some amendments to that. We're still working on the financial part of that, but one of the amendments was an addition of Section 4 to the appropriation bill. Which would require us to go out to bid for the 21 to 23 biennium, which again, we already are and have to under statute. The request for proposal must include an option for coverage through a self-insurance plan. As I mentioned, it would not be prudent for us not to do that, and we already do that. The problematic parts of this are the board may not enter a contract for hospital benefits coverage or medical benefits coverage for the 21 to 23 biennium until the board reports to and receives input from the 67th Legislative Assembly. The report must provide comparative information and the board's evaluation of the bids received, including information on the self-insurance option. The problem with that is it really affects the timing of the bid process. Right now, we have to go out to bid again for that biennium. We'll be issuing that RFP sometime next summer, mid to late next summer. We'd be receiving bids back in the fall, making that determination probably in November or December, so that we can get the information to OMB and the governor to put in the budgets. And so what would happen is we'd agree in principle with an organization. I'm going to project it's going to be the Sanford or Blue Cross, and come up with, when we go out to bid, we have them bid the exact same group of benefits that we have right now, because that's the only way that we can compare them. We know what we're paying or what we will be paying for that group of benefits right now for the upcoming biennium, and then we have them price out their bids for that same exact group of benefits. And so when they come in, it's going to be higher. Trust me, it'll be higher next biennium. But when they come in and one of them says they propose a 10% increase and one proposes a 12% increase, well, then we have our apples-to-apples comparison. And so when we enter into negotiations about the final contract, we'll be doing that in probably November, but we'll get that budget information to the governor and OMB late that year, late next year, frankly, so that they can put it into the budget, so that all the appropriations bills that come in front of you for review and approval, you have the option to look at all of that information, including the price tag for the current slate of benefits that we have. If that's not what you want to pay, then you make modifications to those appropriations bills, like you did 2 years ago. We came in with something like a 15.5% increase, and you moved that down to somewhere around 11 or 12. And so what we did after you took that action is we had to go back and change the slate of benefits, which is something we can do and something which we've done, I think, all the time. We had to be careful that we didn't affect the grandfathered status of the plan, because under the ECA, we can only make certain adjustments and still maintain the grandfathered status. And so in an effort to do that, we ended up buying down some of the premium. So you contributed, say, 98% of that premium, and then from our reserves, we paid 2% of that premium in order to make sure that we could maintain that grandfathered status of the health plan. That's the same thing that would happen coming up next biennium. We would come to you with, or the governor OMB would have a certain amount within the budgets or the appropriations for all the eight entities. You would take a look at that, decide whether that's the amount that you wanted to pay. If it was like this session, then terrific. Then we just move forward with our current slate of benefits. If not, then hopefully you would talk with us and see what will this buy or what will this buy, and we can help you come to that sort of conclusion. But I just want to make sure that it's clear that we don't have the ultimate authority over what that costs. You do. Some of the testimony that I've heard regarding this change is there's been some dissatisfaction or at least some belief that Andy Pers is executing these contracts and forcing it down the legislature's throat, and that's not what happens. We have to make a decision about which carrier to go with, because that's the board's job. But as far as the ultimate amount, that's your job, and that's why we come to you and work with you like we did 4 years ago, like we did this year. What this will do is it will keep us from entering into that initial negotiation with any of these carriers in November or December and push that back into possibly January or February. That presents a significant problem to us from a timing perspective. if we stay with Sanford, there's not as much to do. But if we transition from Sanford to a different carrier, We have a significant amount to do. These are just two pages of the Gantt chart that we used for the transition from the Blues to Sanford last time. This is only the front and back page. There are 486 lines on this. So there are 486 steps that we have to go through to transition over 60,000 people from one carrier to another carrier. We can't do that with a flip of a switch. We can't do that in 2 months. Really pushing, we might be able to do it in 3 months, but we project between 90 and 120 days to do that because we have experience doing that. And so having to come to the Legislative Assembly could add a great deal of time to that whole timeline, which may end up prohibiting us from even getting it done, which would, of course, eliminate health insurance for your employees and your retirees. I'm one of your employees, and I would not like to see that happen. I'm also the executive director of the North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System, and I'm not excited about those phone calls either. So that's a big concern of ours. We also have statutory requirements for the time frame that we issue these RFPs. You can see that in section 2 of my handout here. We're also a little concerned about and receives input from the Legislative Assembly. What does that mean? If that means that the Legislative Assembly can veto what the board did and require us to go out to bid, we won't be able to accomplish that. I mean, if that happens in late January or February, these bids take a long time. They're hundreds if not thousands of pages thick for us to review. And then that transition, if there is a transition, just can't get done in that time frame. We're also concerned about the depth of any information that might be required to provide it to the Legislative Assembly for its consideration. If all it is what we issued last year, once 4 years ago, once the decision was made, we issued some comparative information so that people could see the information, or at least the financial information that the board was looking at. That's not really a trade secret. The price is never a trade secret when you're dealing with a state entity. But some of the underlying things are trade secrets. And the concern is that if one or more of the vendors believes that this is going to require the divulgement of trade secret information, they're probably going to be less likely to want to bid on this. And so that's a concern as far as what is the depth of information that's being required. We also don't have a methodology for how we report that back. Frankly, I would suggest we provide it to you, the Employee Benefits Programs Committee, like we've always done, or at least I did last fall, and I assume Mr. Sparb Collins did the years and years before that. This is what your purpose is to provide legislative oversight over the things that are going to affect PERS, are going to affect the state through PERS and the plans that we administer. I think this committee, if there's going to be anyone that is going to have an oversight role in this entire endeavor, I would think having this committee receive information from me and from my staff would be the most beneficial, and we could keep on that timeline. And the sixth is just my lawyerese speaking. So those are the concerns that we have. Deloitte has indicated, our consultant has indicated, there's no real actuarial issue. It's an issue of timing. It's an issue of the trade secret information that may need to be divulged that they are concerned with. And so from our perspective, it throws a monkey wrench into gears that already run very slowly. So there you are.
Okay, any questions? Representative Laney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quite frankly, PERS brought this on themselves. Not that I'm in favor of it, but the concern last time was it was a major change from one carrier to another, and the legislative body asked PERS to hold off signing the contract until they could at least look at it. PERS denied that, and admittedly, they had the authority to sign off on the contract, which they did. That upset quite a few people. So now you have the bill before you here that says the legislature wants to stick their nose into PERS business. And quite frankly, I think PERS brought it on themselves. So just a little background on that. I think we're going to have to find a way to make the timeline work, whether it's delaying a contract or whatever, but I just don't think it's something we're going to avoid. I think the legislature is going to want to see the contracts before they get signed anyway. So, just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess we could speak frankly, but I'd rather not go back over that ground again. There were significant disagreements between the chambers on that whole issue and the effort, and that was actually two sessions ago. There was an effort on the part of the House to set that contract aside, to refuse to award it to the successful bidder. And I think had the Senate gone along with the House, we would have been sued and we would have lost. It's as simple as that. So, Mr. Chairman, at that time, I was chairman of this committee, and I can take responsibility for not having done more diligent work during the process of that bid. And I think that responsibility does lie with this committee. Legislature does have input into the process through this committee. In my defense, the previous carrier had 37 years without competition. This whole health insurance was never even on the radar of the legislature, and now it is. But the legislature still has input into the process through this committee. To say that we should interfere with a process that in this circumstance began last March and just takes that much time to come to the legislature and then say, and then the legislature says, no, we don't like that carrier, and we start the process over, unless you want to extend the current contract and call a special session to consider whether or not you want to approve the carrier in the second rebid or in the rebid, seems to me to be pretty problematic when we have a process in place that does involve legislative input. And I would say, in agreement with Representative Laney, that when a member of the House went to the PERS board and asked to speak and was denied, they should let him speak. They were not bound to anything that he said, but they should have allowed him that courtesy. There, I think there were at that time 7 board members. I think 6 of them would have let him speak. That's unfortunate. That was 4 years ago. I think going forward, it's really problematic to have this in this bill. And Mr. Chairman, if you're looking for a recommendation, I hope the recommendation is on Section 4, not the entire PERS budget.
And Mr. Chairman, just to, I thought Senator Dever was going to go here, but that session 4 years ago is when the Legislative Assembly added 2 legislators to our board to provide that oversight so that there was that conduit of information. I can't speak to what that conduit of information looked like back in that day, but be assured, I wasn't here, but I've learned that lesson, and I'm going to make sure that our legislators, our board, this committee are aware of what we're doing.
Okay. I would just say in addition to that, what happened was unfortunate. But I think that the legislature appropriates dollars. And you're talking about, if my memory serves, a $400 to $500 million expenditure. Or what is it?
$600.
Oh, $600 million. Okay. So that figure is certainly within the purview of the legislature to be able to, in my opinion, have some input. Now, we have to define input. What is that? As you brought forth in your comments, what does that mean? So I am going to support this in a favorable way, depending upon how the motion is made, but I do believe the legislature has a role in this, and that we should be able to look at a contract. To me, it's not the carrier.
it's the plan. What is the plan? Is it adequately protecting the, that's our role, is to look out for the, as is the PERS board, to look out for the public employees and provide the best plan. So I think we need to work together and get past this so that the legislature, we can look at the contract and say, yes, we think this is a good thing too. I don't think, in my opinion, that it's carrier-based, it's plan-based, is the, what I've been hearing. So whatever comes out of this vote, I would favor a favorable recommendation. Representative Craig.
Mr. Chairman, I would move 2023 with a favorable recommendation. Now, who they report to, it can be this committee, legislative management would be another option, or the budget section, wherever that falls out. I mean, I'm not going to suggest which committee that would be, but I would move a favorable recommendation on 2023.
There's a motion for a favorable recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Well, under discussion, I would say that, you know, the thing that bothers me most is the timing aspect of this. I understand that. But I also believe that this will force us to provide more clarity to the things that we're talking about here. What is intent? Who should be? Those are discussions I think we need to have. So any further comments? Senator Mather.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it appears it's not in the purview of our committee to recommend a change to this amendment, but I've heard one from Representative Kreit. I mean, that one of the problems here is the timing. Now, if this amendment said subject to and report being made to the budget section or legislative management immediately upon the bids have been received, I could support this, but the way it is here, it doesn't give that option. We may be escalating the cost of our plan by having this wording in here. So, you know, I just hope we resist the motion and recognize that we have made changes to close the gap between the board and the legislature. We've done it by our discussions. We've done it by adding two legislators, and we've done it by a much more active employee benefits committee than we had many years ago. So I think we've met the needs of the legislature for more information, and I would hope we could resist this motion.
Senator Dever. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of clarification. It's not a report to budget section. It's not a report to legislative management. It's not a report to the Employee Benefits Committee. It is input from the next legislative session. So as we sit in that session in April, we'll be determining whether or not to accept a contract that will need to go into place on July 1st. And the amendment, as I understand it, says the legislature provide input. I don't know if that means that the legislature provides approval or just provides some kind of input. I think this committee fulfills the necessary involvement of the legislature in that process. And in defense of the PERS board members, there's no finer group of people that takes their job more seriously than that. And those meetings are all open, and any legislator is welcome to come anytime and sit in on one of those meetings. And if they would like to provide input into that process, then just as any other meeting, they should ask to be put on the agenda and not just show up at the meeting and demand to be heard.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Krebsbaum.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we have here is a bill that would definitely impede the process of doing the job for the state employees and all other political subdivisions that are insured under this the PERS umbrella. I see a lot of unsettlement within the state employees in the fact that it'll be kind of in limbo as to the coverage and how it would take place. I hear the arguments for it, and I'm listening to that, but I do think the process in the past has been doing a good job. You know, it goes back to years ago. I kept hearing, we have no competition. We have to have competition. We got competition. Some people just don't seem to want to accept the competition. And I think there's been a broad difference between the two bodies here, between the House and the Senate. And I think we have to work to come to some resolution on this issue. But I do not see this as being beneficial to the process.
Okay.
So I'm not going to support the favorable recommendation.
Any other comments? Okay, if you take the roll, please, on a favorable recommendation.
Favorable? Representative LaFleur?
Yes.
Doctor?
Yes.
Kreit?
Yes.
Lanning?
Yes.
Mitzkog?
No.
Owens?
Yes.
Ruby?
Yes.
Senator Stever?
No.
Becadal?
No.
Krebsbaum?
No.
Larson?
Yes.
Lee?
No.
And Mather?
No.
We had 7, so the motion carries.
I'm sorry?
We had 7, so we had the motion carries.
Okay. Do we have any other business?
Not unless there's anything for the good of the order.
Nope. Okay. Meeting adjourned. Thank you all. Thank you.